doing standing here? I give you a gift. You stand here, show up my pitcher. Run, dummy!
Vaughn into the windup in his first offering. Just a bit outside. He tried the corner and missed.
Bull Durham and Major League, they're two of my favorite movies, and they just happen to be about baseball. Hello, I'm Paul Yeager. This is the M2M Podcast. A little warning here. This one's going to sound different than some of the other podcasts we've done, but we hope the content will keep you through the entire time.
Get him a uniform.
Well, I have long talked about wanting to do this, where you sit at a baseball game. I always threaten that we're going to actually do it, and this time we are. This is the MTOM Podcast, and we are at a baseball game, but we are going to talk about agriculture. But let's face it is America's pastime. Joining me today is a longtime friend of mine and fellow Cardinal fan, so forgive us if we do discuss the ways of the boys at Bush. Dave Price, he's a reporter at WHO-TV in Des Moines, a Illinois native, but St. Louis, the Illinois side, right? Isn't that where you're
from? That's right, Illinois side of St. Louis area.
Yeah, so you've been covering politics in Iowa. I'm going to say we're getting close to, I hate to say it, 20 years.
No, that's weird, isn't it? Yeah, I started here in 2001, in April of 2001, and here we are 18-plus years later.
Don't, let's not do the math on how this all works out. So when you came here, what did you know about Iowa?
Not much. I knew I had two friends from the University of Missouri who worked here. Three friends, actually. They were my connections here, and I knew it was Chicago Cubs country with the Iowa Cubs here as the AAA affiliate. Truthfully, I didn't really know much. I was working in Montgomery, Alabama at the time. First time I've ever lived outside the Midwest, and wanted to get back closer to the Midwest and closer to my family in St. Louis, and I knew there was an opening at WHO-TV here, and Iowa was a lot closer than Montgomery, Alabama, quite honestly.
Well, I should say we are at an Iowa Cubs baseball game, the AAA affiliate of your Chicago Cubs. Today it is a game against the Round Rock Express. So Round Rock, that's in Austin, Texas. Not too far from Alabama, but everything's far from Texas and Alabama when it comes down to it. Round Rock used to be owned, not anymore, by Nolan Ryan. That's how they got the Express.
Ah, there you go.
And they're a train. That's kind of a thing in Texas, as you found.
Sure.
Baseball, what do you find is enjoyable about this sport?
I love what people who hate baseball hate. In that, and I get it, if you want to watch nonstop, fast-paced action. You know, you can watch basketball, college or pro, and I'm not really an NBA fan. I like a little more defense than the NBA provides, but college basketball, someone can score at any time, right? There
right.
can always be a steal. So even if you don't have the ball, you can end up with 2 or 3 points. And football is the same way, right? You never know what could happen. Baseball, you know, only the team at bat has a chance of scoring. And I love the strategy. I love the history. I love the downtime. So as we sit here and watch this game, it was a 2-0 count. And you're wondering, all right, he needs to throw it in there, right? So he's probably going fastball. Probably going to be somewhere close to the plate if he had any control, and it was not, as he threw it up and it was ball three.
But at 91 miles an hour, you're right on the fastball.
Right. And so I love that time in between where you're trying to think ahead, what's going to happen here? Are they going to hit and run? Are they going to steal? Are they going to bunt? Are they going to lift this pitcher? Are they going to pinch hit? What is it going to be? I was raised on baseball. My dad was a huge St. Louis Cardinals fan. Actually, years ago, his mom, my grandma, babysat Whitey Herzog.
Really?
Who was the Cardinal manager in the 80s, in the glory days. She babysat Whitey and his brother, and when I met Whitey here at Principal Park years ago, I mentioned that, and I said, hey, I'm not a big autograph guy, so I'd like to just shake your hand. I did get him to sign a ball, though, even though I generally don't do that. And I just said, hey, I don't know if you remember this, but my grandma, her maiden name was Olga Reichert, she used to babysit you and he, oh my gosh, and he jumps in, you got to be kidding. Of course I remember her. And she was probably an early teenager maybe when Whitey was a kid. And he said, yeah, she babysat me and my brother. Oh, I'm going to have to sit. And he said he was going to have to go home. And when he talked to his wife, he was going to have to tell her about it. And so, I mean, I grew up on baseball. It's just always been such a big part of us.
And there's something about every pitch, anything can happen.
Oh, totally.
My oldest son is actually sitting to your left, and I've coached his baseball teams on and off for years. And I've told all those teams, I go, anything can happen on any pitch, and you have to think, what are you going to do if the ball is hit on a line, if it's popped up, if it's a ground ball? That's just the fielders. What base am I throwing to? Then if you're the batter or the base runner, what are you doing? There's something, and it changes from pitch to pitch. And your days kind of change from day to day. Before you became the political director at the NBC affiliate here in Des Moines, you would be what we call a general assignment reporter, which was some of the biggest fear and also some of the greatest reward, because anything can happen on any given day.
When I was in toward the end of undergrad, the beginning of grad school, I worked at Ryan's Steakhouse.
Yeah.
At the time, they had pretty good steaks, but they were really known for their big buffet. That's really what it's like being a general assignment reporter. One day you may get a good ribeye. Some days it's the wilted 3-day-old lettuce on the salad bar, and that's all you can get, right?
The next batter for the Express.
General assignment can be a blessing and a curse. There are days when you really get an unexpected, almost life-changing story. You know, there are people you meet and stories that you'll just never forget. But I really, there was a friend of mine in undergrad who planted the political seed probably with me. And my dad was always into politics growing up, so I got some of that for him. I wasn't really super into it undergrad. I wish I would have, because I would have double majored in political science.
Oh, you would have?
I would have. Huh. And I also would have worked for a campaign or two in college just to get that inside feel of what it would be like, you know. But it was until my last semester of college before I really took any interest in it. So I really kind of missed out on all that, which I don't really have too many regrets, but that'd probably be one of them. I wish I could have had that experience. But doing a beat is so much more enjoyable. You get to learn the material a lot better, follow it on a closer level, and I think get a lot deeper understanding and appreciation for what it is.
Well, and that's the hard thing that I don't know if everybody understands of your local affiliates. Very rarely on a market from Des Moines smaller do they have somebody that's specific to one topic. So many general assignments. There's very few stations that have someone dedicated to business or agriculture or politics or health. It's just not the way it works anymore. So it is very hard. You have to be, I always used to say, I have to be an expert for 90 seconds on this topic that you know everything about, that the general population needs to know. And that's always kind of the challenge. Now, after a while, you understood a little bit more about health, and you understood a little bit more about police and investigations, and then you start understanding about the sausage of government and how the politics are made in the back rooms. But sometimes you just frankly don't have time to get deep on a story and get all the information, and therefore you're seen as shallow. But there's a lot of people who watch you on a 6 o'clock news. They don't really want the detailed version of a story. They just kind of want to know a little bit about everything that's going on.
And that's what I would say the balance is, and kind of the fine line where you're always trying to navigate here. I do feel doing general assignment helps you for a beat later, in that you have a little more, it's like getting your general courses, you know, when you start college, right?
Yes.
You get in high school as well, for that matter. You get a little experience into a lot of different things, and it gives you a little bit of a foundation so you can ask a little better questions, do a little better research. When you really focus in one area, you can go so much deeper. And I totally agree with you that few people do beats. I would also argue that even the large markets, it's that way too.
Right.
Most people in TV, frankly, are just general assignment by the nature of the beast. And not everybody, frankly, not a lot of people like to have specific beats because it does limit you to what you're going to cover. But
you can't cover the plane crash because you're our health reporter.
Right, right. And, you know, it's just not the way – now at our place, you know, in a middle-sized market like this, and I would probably in most places right now, if there's something big, we'll go do that. I'll go cover breaking news. There was a house exploded a couple weeks ago. I ran out on that because I was sitting there, and we heard it on the scanner, and somebody needed to get there fast, and so we did. So we got in fast on the 5 and 6 o'clock news. And, you know, it's not like I can't do that stuff. And, frankly, that's kind of nice to run out and do those kind of spot news, those breaking news stories from time to time. But the spending the time on a designated beat like this, hopefully there's some viewer value with it. Now, the line I walk is that you mentioned the 6 o'clock news. I want to be able to get, if you're a junkie and you're really into something, I want to give you some nuggets in there that you'll learn. Now, if you're a more normal person, you know, and you're watching the news at 6 o'clock and you just got home after... Nice line drive catch by the second baseman.
I thought we were going to maybe see a triple play.
I know.
Have to break into the action.
Bases loaded here. That probably saved two runs, though.
Absolutely.
But if you're a normal person and, you know, politics is not your thing and you're not some kind of junkie who lives and breathes it, you still want to have a sense of what's going on in the world and try to figure out what's happening, why is it happening, what does it mean, who's doing it, all those kind of things. And there's a balance there, and we try to keep that in mind on local TV, that most of our viewers are probably more normal and aren't junkies. And so you need to think about that the way you lay out your story so that everyone can understand it. And it's not talking down to them, and I hope this doesn't come across that way. But don't use a lot of inside baseball jargon and knowledge, you know, that people don't care to know and don't have time to follow. We're in the middle of this presidential race where we have at least 26 candidates, if you say two Republicans and 24 Democrats. Most people can't process this. I can't process it. It's too much. I can't possibly keep everybody's position on X different than the other 25. So you have to find a way to boil this down to what matters most, give it in on TV, put it in digestible chunks, that when you're sitting there eating dinner or getting dinner ready or sitting on the couch watching on your phone, however you consume the news, that you can process what's happening. And then I try to supplement that with our online coverage, social media, my 30-minute show on Sunday mornings, The Insiders. I do a podcast. Those can kind of delve a little deeper into certain topics.
Do you remember the first time you went to a farm for a story? Was that in Alabama that you went to a farm? Or did you wait, not cover any agriculture till you got to Iowa? When was the first time Dave Price went to a farm?
No, I think I did in St. Louis and radio.
Okay.
I worked at Camel X, the big AM station in St. Louis. Started there my last semester of undergrad and then stuck with it through part of grad school until it became too much commuting back and forth. But that was probably the first time. And then obviously far more so in Iowa.
As it's in the fabric of everything you do.
It really is. And you have to have, and I realize the percentage is right. I mean, most people don't work on a farm anymore. But, man, when you sit and talk to people, you have, so many people have some familial connection to a farm. You're still on it. Your mom and dad, grandma, grandpa, aunt, buddy's family, whatever the heck it is. Or they're in a related business of some sort to where I would argue if you work in this state, you have to have some minimal working knowledge of quote unquote agriculture.
Right. So, and if you end up on the farm and you say something, I'm not saying the difference between gilts and something in the hog market or something specific, but if you come out and you're going to ask for a ride it is a combine, but you're like, can I get a ride in your snowplow? Well, you're going to probably get laughed off the farm.
Where do you grow the ethanol? Show me the ethanol plant.
Let me see what's back over there, the big thing with all the steam. No, I want to know the...
Can I pick one and take it home?
There you go. Do you ever have new reporters that come in that you have to kind of educate them? Is there a ag beat boot camp?
There really isn't, and that's not a bad job. That's not a bad idea, rather. That would be especially helpful. I think it's fun to watch some of the presidential candidates try to fake it. You know, some of them, to their credit, really try to get in on it, you know.
How do you know that they're faking it? Is it their attire?
Courtney.
Or what they're saying.
And my giveaway. I just think, you know, they're doing everything from, you know, a 50,000-foot view of things. And, you know, you can tell they don't have much day-to-day knowledge of whether it's the ethanol industry, whatever it is. You know, it's you can come in here and rip on Big Ag or whatever it is, but you have to have a practical understanding of what's been happening the last 50 years in ag. And, you know, some of them can't do that. But, you know, a lot... I don't pretend to stand here, and I couldn't lecture in a, you know, an implement convention. I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that.
But okay,
nor even starting one up.
You mentioned the candidates. There's a couple of them that have said, you know, Big Ag is bad. You are from a town where Big Ag is not a swear word. Monsanto is an absolute way of life to the greater St. Louis area economy and all the people that work there. So Big Ag means something different to you, both from a hometown and now a current town of where you work.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And you can, I think if you really start digging into that issue just on the Democratic side, you can see how they have a difference of opinion. And I'm going to add, I'll put ag with environmental as well.
Okay.
You
and know, that's, I think a lot of people do.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Let's just say, like Steve Bullock, for example, the Montana governor, he talks differently. You know, coal industry is an industry in his state, so he's not out there saying, let's get rid of it all right away. Whereas you have Jay Inslee, the governor of Washington, who has made fighting climate change his big issue, the issue for him. And, you know, he's all about coal's bad. We got to get rid of it. So, you know, and that's it's a much, I realize that's not a typical agriculture.
But no, but that is something that our audience, I think, understands and sees, because you see the Kentucky way, the West Virginia way, because you're like, well, the head of the Senate is a guy who coals a big thing in his state. So what's he going to do? But now right. Mitch McConnell has said, you know what? We know it's not going to be there forever. How about this hemp thing? Because tobacco has gone away. That was a major thing in their state. Candidates, you have a front row seat. Okay, let's do this. Covering with politics and covering a candidate, when you see that they're going to a farm, what goes through your mind? How deep are you looking into whatever it is their substance is? And do you think that that opens that candidate up to being asked specifically, we're going to talk ethanol and renewable fuels today, so I better not ask a question about hogs or insurance or whatever has become the news of the day somewhere else that's impacting you when that candidate comes in?
I always think, and you'll have different levels of this from campaigns that I've seen over the years. I mentioned I moved here in 2001, so I just missed the 2000 presidential. I was in Alabama for that and covered that on a different level. Nothing near as intense as what it is in this state with the caucuses. And Alabama's not typically a... It's usually a Republican state, so there's not a lot of drama there. But you will get different presidential campaigns, and I've had them over the years. Some of them are fearful of what you just brought up there. They want it to be topic-focused on wherever their event is. In my mind, if you're running for president of the United States, you should be able to handle anything, because on the job you will handle anything. I think people are willing, in this day and age, I really think people are willing to understand if you've evolved on an issue. Now, we in the media and the candidates themselves have to demonstrate that it's not a flip-flop for political convenience to switch from something to the other. But I think most people have changed their mind on something over the course of their lives, and sometimes it could be something really big, you know, a big emotional or moral issue. For some of these campaigns, though, they really freak out about the thought of a live microphone in front of them, and they don't know what's coming.
Yeah.
Which is absurd to me, because My gosh, imagine being the President of the United States and you every morning you have that folder on your desk, you know, with all the threats we face. And what, 99% of that never becomes public, or maybe more, I don't know. And so it does strike me as ridiculous when campaigns come to us. So you mentioned going to a farm. Yeah, they may want to talk about only climate change, only big ag, only ethanol, price of soybeans, whatever the heck it is. But that's just not the way it works. They should, especially if they pick that. In my mind, if you go do an event on a farm, you ought to be able to take some farm questions about everything.
Right.
And if you don't know, you know, be honest enough to say, I don't know about enough about that. I think people give you a fair shake and will understand if you don't know everything.
So, okay, you bring up the press conference thing. I think some people see a press conference who aren't in the media and maybe work on the other side, like you're talking about, the handlers of a campaign, and they say, today is only going to be talking about soybean exports to China, and we're not taking questions about anything else. You ever tempted to pack it up and go away?
Yeah, and we've had, I can't think of one where they've been that blunt. Most of the times they'll try to shape you beforehand and say, hey, we would really rather not talk about blah, blah, blah. Now, there have been a few times where I'll listen to something and frankly, I don't care because I don't know how to advance the story. If it's already out there, I don't know what else to ask, you know. I feel like in this 24/7 culture, especially covering presidential candidates, I think of the Iowa audience first. My job is not to try to impress the national folks with getting some question in there that, you know, just broke on cable that they can respond to and it can get some Twitter traffic or whatever. I mean, I think Iowa audience has to come first. And you have to sort of process that. What can I do to advance something or explore some topic that we haven't had? I don't remember anybody really standing before the microphone, at least lately, saying, hey, you can't ask us about blah, blah, blah.
Well, I got to tell you, if you and I are at the same event, and it is, say, a trade event, and I really want to hear what this person has to say about trade, but I know that something just broke about their past, and that's going to be the first question. And there's never going to be another follow-up on trade because the event's going to get hijacked. Yeah. I got to say, as someone who covers that topic, it is frustrating. Sure. But very. I also understand it. And I think sometimes our audience, who is a very specific audience, they do want to know. But they also understand there are other topics and other parts and other insight that one of those candidates can give.
No, I get that. And I can. That would be especially frustrating. And I think we all have that in our own way. You know, we're going in there thinking, whether it's because our boss said, hey, you need to go talk to so-and-so about whatever the topic is, or if it's my pure personal curiosity in something or something the candidate said that was a little unclear that I need some follow-up on. You know, and if I look at it like we do a ton of news and just the on-air stuff, not even social media and our digital platforms, the WHOTV.com, all that stuff.
Don't worry, I'll let you know if it's coming our way.
There was a foul ball headed our way. I wanted to make sure we weren't getting doinked in the back of the head on the rebound. So we have to. I look at it like, as I mentioned earlier, I want to have bite-sized chunks that are easily digestible for people to understand. And so to do that, I will frequently break my stories up into about different issues. Maybe it's something at 4, something at 5, something at 6, whatever it is. And so by that nature, I have to know a little bit more about it. So if my longer story runs at 5 o'clock and it's on soybean prices, what is the trade war done to that, let's just say, I may need a follow-up because one 10-second soundbite's not enough to do the story, and I need some more depth on it. You know, and the soundbite may be President Trump's trade war is terrible and people are suffering. All right,
and
maybe they phrase
that
it in such a way that it's a good soundbite, but it may, we've heard that a million times. Why? What are you going to do about it? What are you going to do differently? You know, there are a lot of different aspects of that, and I need the follow-up, and somebody else may have a different angle he or she is pursuing.
All right, so we've seen it. I think George Bush might have been the first. I don't remember. Barack Obama did it, and I think President Trump has done it now too. They will call 12 affiliates or newspapers in 12 different markets where an issue is important and say, Dave, we want you to come to Washington, D.C. You're going to get a one-on-one with the president. You get 7 minutes, and you have to be here at this time. Now, you're like, wow, that's fantastic. As part of you feel, I don't want it because I know that I'm playing a role in their agenda and getting a certain message out in a certain state on a certain issue. Because that's how I sometimes look at those when they call, all right, we know that if we'll take your competitors across the street. If we call one person from Hearst, that's going to go to all Hearst stations because they share it. Your corporate ownership, you might share all of that. And then all of a sudden, you know what? Well, wait a minute. The Wisconsin people, the Idaho, North Dakota. Okay, this is all about a pipeline. And so do you ever have that sense of I'm being played? I don't want to be played. And I still have to ask questions even though I know why I'm being asked here.
Oh, I think you know that if they're offering it to you, they have an objective.
Because of all the reporters, for them to pick up the phone and dial for you, you right. know there's a reason.
Right.
I mean, of course, you do great work, David.
I doubt that's what they're thinking, but thank you. I don't care why they picked me, probably. I look at it as an opportunity. We have a chance to get a question in there that I hope my audience wants answered. And I'm realistic. One of the things that I think people don't realize, especially when you're talking about the president or down the road where you have a nominee for president, they give you such a limited amount of time, and it's frequently 5 minutes. And maybe 5 minutes seems like a long time, but it's not good. You know, that's why, to be honest with you, in the caucus cycle, I much more enjoy earlier on because I get more time with the candidates. A lot of times they're not as rehearsed. They're not as tightly packed, their schedules. They haven't formulated all of their talking points on all the questions. Because, you know, at some point they hear almost every question, right?
Right.
Especially the good ones who do town halls who take questions at events. Not all of them do it, but the ones who do. And it makes them so much better. Because they know how to handle hostile questions. They know how to handle virtually any topic. Even if they have to stall and not answer a question, right? But then the next time they get it, they're like, oh, yeah. Whether it's a handler or they themselves have figured out, hey, this is a better answer.
Or, yeah, they'll come back to the person and say, we need a better answer.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, that doesn't work, whatever it was. So I think they're so much better doing that. But anyway, when they give you 5 minutes down the stretch, let's say once it's in the general election campaign, you can't hardly get anything in there. That's probably two questions, maybe three. Occasionally you'll get somebody who has very succinct answers. And so in my mind, I'm thinking, what do I want to accomplish today when there are a million things you want to ask? Because there's so much news of the day, especially in 24/7 news cycle like we have now. And, you can make up a list of 10 questions, but you know what? You're not going to get them answered. Realistically, you're going to do a couple. And if they don't, what if they don't answer your question the first time, which right. is very likely, you're going to have to follow up, and you have to know that going in. So, you know, if you start with some kind of softball question to get yourself going, that may be the only opening you had.
And therefore, you come back to the station without what you were sent there to do.
And with no real news.
Yeah. And, okay, so then when a candidate goes, again, when they're on the campaign trail, they will be, and I'll say, this is, we'll just localize it to Iowa for right now. If somebody's running for governor or for Senate, they will go and, okay, we're going to do a big speech today in Sioux City, one media market. Then we're going to fly to Mason City for another media market. Then we got to go to Davenport, Cedar Rapids, and then Des Moines. It's the same speech if you're covering them from place to place. But if I'm a reporter in each one of those places and I haven't heard the candidate in 2 weeks or 3 weeks because I'm the general assignment person, the governor hasn't come here in 3 months. And when it did, I wasn't on the beat. Wow, that sounds new to me. But it's the same thing that they say every time, and it's not news. And I think then the candidate wins because they get their message they want out because the reporter used the best sounding bite because it's the most rehearsed line. Oh, it is so good to be here. I love being around my people that are... One, you know, oh, that's such a funny line. No, that's the same line they use. That's the same shtick
right.
feels, in every city.
It feels like home. Yeah. Iowa always feels like home.
Yeah.
We see that all the time. And then they explain why.
Yeah.
You know, granted, they're from New York City, or I'm not picking on de Blasio, but whatever it is. Wherever they're from, somehow they can do some kind of Iowa connection. And you're thinking, come on now. Really? I don't think Des Moines, you know, or you're standing in Nevada doing us, you know, doing their event, and they're saying it's just like Chicago, or it's just like L.A. or whatever. Well, probably not, but okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, good luck. That's a one way to stretch the truth. Right. But I'm always, you know, it's like, wow, President Bush talked about these six things. They're like, he says that all the time. So when you're, I think you've done it. I've done it where we've covered a candidate for a day or two on the ins and outs of everything. And, oh, yeah, here's the same speech. All of a sudden, you know, and all those national people that follow a candidate, they know when something's new.
Right.
They know when an answer changes.
Right.
So, therefore, an embed on that campaign is important that is there all the time and ornery all the time because you haven't answered that question at the last 12 stops. Why did you answer it today?
That's where it's so difficult, right? Because my goal every day with every story, and, you know, it's probably not possible realistically, but every newscast where I have a story, I want something new explored. That's the goal. You know, now there are only so many hours in a day, you know, and you have to balance for your own mental health and physical health. You have to have some kind of balance. And as we sit here today, I worked 19 days in a row, and I took Friday, Saturday, Sunday off, where my wife was out of town at a convention, but I took our two kids, and we went back to St. Louis area to go see my mom. We saw a Cardinal game, all kinds of stuff. But, you know, it's a seven-hour drive to my mom's house each way, so, you know, there's not a lot of downtime there. But
No. You
have to have some kind of time to spend with your family and a recharge, all those kind of things. But the best you can, you have to, especially when you're covering a beat, follow as much as you can. Those national reporters do know when things change. Now, some of what they cover, I don't find particularly relevant for my audience here. I don't get really caught up a lot in the horse race stuff with polls, you know, who's winning, who's falling, whatever. When a candidate has a one-point change from last week's national poll, I'm not sure that's statistically significant enough to lead our newscast at 6 o'clock. Now, we do sprinkle in polls. I'm not saying we don't use them, because of course we do. I just don't want to see us rely on them too much. And, you know, I think if 2016 taught us anything, it's you need to be careful the polls you use and how much you rely on them and what they're measuring. And I do think in defense of some of those national polls, a lot of those national polls showed Hillary Clinton winning. And I would argue, I'm not a pollster, but I would argue that a lot of them were right. I mean, she did win the popular vote, so that's what it measured. A lot of those things weren't measuring electoral college, the complicated way we at present determine the winner of the presidency.
At present. Nice.
You never know. Never know when things will change, right? But... And if Democrats had their way, they'd probably change overnight the way it's happened with Gore and Clinton. But so I think you have to kind of keep those things in mind. It's, you know, we can rip on them and all this stuff, but, you know, they thought Hillary Clinton was going to get more votes. She did. She got 3 or 4 million votes than Trump did, and he still won. I just don't want to see us too focused on that, and I think we collectively need to do a better job of not insulating our opinions, our topics, have our coverage guided by our inner circle of people. We don't report to impress our peers. I mean, winning an Emmy or a Murrow or whatever it is, or scooping somebody, all those things are great, but we have to make sure it's the people in your neighborhood, it's the people not in your neighborhood, it's people who aren't like you. And I think I would argue some of that is how Donald Trump won, because he connected with people who weren't necessarily measured by a lot of the national media.
Sounds like content that you should maybe put into a book someday.
Hey, that's a great idea.
You know, maybe once and then maybe do it again.
Maybe do it a second time.
And exactly. When you talk about being holed away from your family for a while, when you write these books, you really have to be disciplined to lock yourself away. I know you've told me before just how stressful it is to for when the key time is coming, when you kind of know what the idea is and then you start... You peck away. I mean, writing the book for you has not been an easy process. Has it been a rewarding one?
It has. So we've done two of them now. The first one was Caucus Chaos, primarily about the 2012 Iowa caucus campaign. And I did it about 2 years later. So it was really kind of a historical look back. It was fun to do. Reminded me a little bit about grad school at Mizzou, you know, right, putting a thesis together. But It was rewarding, but it was frustrating because I didn't know what the heck I was doing. The final product was the third version of the book, and it wasn't until my wife really helped me guide the flow of that book, and then it all came together, and I thought, oh, okay. Now, that one was more sort of a chapter-by-chapter look at Candidate X, and the next chapter was Candidate Y, and, you know, whatever. This new one, Caucus Chaos Trump, was more, I wanted to go deeper into things, and truthfully, this one was a lot more enjoyable, I guess, because it was probably more of my experiences in it. I feel like in my position, and some may disagree with this, but I can't do opinion. I don't think that's my role, but I do think that I've been here long enough that I have some analytical things I can share. You'll never hear me say, I love Donald Trump, I hate Donald Trump, whatever it is. I don't think anybody cares what that is, frankly. And I almost do no opinion except for baseball. I don't cover baseball, so that's my excuse for it. But this was really rewarding. It's always hard to find time, right? And everything comes with a cost. Every hour I'm writing is an hour I'm not spending time with the kids or my wife or working out or whatever. But I do think that the second book, I was a little smarter about how I did it, and I found that writing early in the morning is probably more my sweet spot. So it made me go to bed earlier, when frankly, all three of my family members were asleep anyway, and I usually just either read or binge on Netflix or something, catch up on some tape show on TV. So it was probably more productive for me. And it just was a lot more enjoyable putting this one together.
And you can get those books in a number of places. Is that right?
It can. We self-published through Amazon. They have one of their companies called, it used to be called CreateSpace, but now it's KDP Select. So you can go through Amazon, and then some of the bookstores, Beaverdale Books in Des Moines, Plot Twist Bookstore in Ankeny. We have them in one of the Hy-Vees over by Jordan Creek Mall, and then short of getting me early here before we formally announce all the rest here, Paul, but details to follow on all the other ones. And then
where were they these details through your Twitter?
If you go to caucuschaos.com,
okay,
that's my website that I have separately from all my work stuff for the station, and we put it all on there.
Do you feel the books have changed the way national campaigns have talked to you and approached you and allowed you access or not allowed you access to talk to their candidates?
Because of the book or just in general?
Because you're an author now, not just a news reporter in Des Moines.
I think it's helped. I think they know that I want to get a little deeper on things. That doesn't work for everybody because some people don't want to talk about deeper things. It has, people do look at, they seem to talk to me differently after writing books. I don't know how to explain it. When people need, so we do a lot of public speaking, right? But I've had probably five times more requests since I started publishing books, which is great, right? Because I bring the books with me. People buy the books. It all it goes into the kids' college fund, so it's all great, right? I mean, it's perfect. So I get to go. And I as much as I love doing TV, I truly love speaking to groups, which may seem counterintuitive. You know, I'm on TV talking to tens of thousands of people, right? And in a room, it could be 20, 50, 100 people, whatever it is. Some of them are smaller, and they're 8, 10 people. But there's just something about being able to look people in the eye and getting that instant feedback from people and taking questions and having deeper conversations and personal conversations that has been such a blast. And I have counterparts in TV who don't like speaking in public or talking in public, but I totally love it.
Well, I don't... Yeah, the public speaking side of things. Talking to a camera really intimidates people because they can't get a human reaction. And when you are speaking in front of people, you can tell when something's going over their heads, going under their heads, or they just don't want to be there. You can tell when a joke bombs. You can tell when something lands, and it allows you to say, oh, they seem interested in this. I'm going to delve there, which is something television is really hard. Or even right now, this. People easily could have hit and fast-forward a long time when they heard us talking baseball. They might have hit fast-forward and then came back down and heard the words John Kerry and said, now forget it, you know, just another political hack podcast. So it is an interesting time to be in the communications business because you got to think of when we started, there wasn't, I mean, did you have a station email? I mean, we had email in college. Remember that? And it evolves out of college. There wasn't Twitter. There wasn't Facebook. You didn't really talk to viewers that way. They didn't write you. They wrote you letters that took 3 days to get from their house to your station once the news director sorted through the mail. Now you usually have feedback before you're off set on one of your newscasts.
It is... That part is so different when people ask me, when I speak to groups about social media, is it good or bad? And I always say mixed because it really does get you instantaneous feedback. And I'm on Twitter a lot. I get a lot. I consume a lot of news that way. I interact with a lot of people that way. There are a lot of very hateful people, though, on social media. And... look, sometimes they do have good people have good points about things. It explores another angle that I never thought about. I would say more commonly it's, you know, you use certain words and phrases and it may mean something in my mind and to somebody else it means something different.
Right.
And it's good to know that. I don't always understand them. I don't always agree with them, but it's beneficial to know that. Then you have some people who all they want to do is fight. They don't want anything that they perceive as negative about something that they believe or a candidate they like, a policy they like, whatever. And it's hard. You can waste your entire day on Facebook responding to trolls. Now, sometimes, and some of my colleagues will ask why I even ever bother. And I said, truthfully, I've had some of the best conversations with people who have started out pretty aggressively. I knew you were such and such. I knew you were a Democrat. I knew you were a Republican, whatever it is. And you end up sort of getting past that, and then they say, you know, hey, I'm sorry, I was having a bad day. I misunderstood something you were saying or whatever it is. I understand what you're saying now, whatever. And we have continued a relationship, so that part's kind of rewarding. Now, granted, that doesn't happen every day. Or far from it.
Or far from it. We're here in the top of the fourth, Round Rock and Iowa, tied at 0, 0-2-0 for Round Rock, 0-1-0 for the Cubs. Joshua Rojas, the left fielder, digs in on the 1-1 count from Trevor Clifton outside for a ball. How do the Cardinals get to the postseason?
Man, I don't know. I can't figure out the team. I was more optimistic going into this season, so they trade for Paul Goldschmidt from Arizona Diamondbacks. And a true elite hitting and fielding first baseman. As I say that, the pitcher just threw the ball away past first base on a pickoff attempt, and it went in the right field corner, and the runner advances to second.
And where was the right fielder backing it up the whole time? See, he was not in the game.
He was not.
Little league, I'd be yelling right now.
Paul Goldschmidt may have scooped that. I'm not sure. That was not much of a throw to first, so I don't think even Goldschmidt may have been able to get that. But I can't figure it out. I honestly thought the Cardinals' bullpen would be pretty good. I thought their starting staff, I didn't think it would be elite, but I thought it would be good enough with guys coming back from injury, and it seemed like it would be deep. But, man, the offense I thought would be so much better than it is, and I'm just wondering if this is going to be another maddening year where they're going to be caught in between and they aren't quite good enough to knock off the Yankees of the world or Astros or whoever it may
be. Even the Cubs.
Or the Dodgers or the Cubs, right.
Yeah. Brewers are pretty good. The Reds are making a charge. It's never easy. That's the type of ball that can come and get us is the ricochet where we sit here. So, well, I don't know. It's always fun. And I know sometimes you've asked candidates about baseball and sports when you know someone has a baseball past. The former head of the EPA, Scott Pruitt, used to be the owner of the Oklahoma City franchise, which plays in the Pacific Coast League. And so there are times when the lines cross, and maybe a candidate sometimes is okay to have something completely different.
And I try not to do too much of that, but I do, for me, I do like to get them off topic sometimes just to see what they'll talk about. I will tell I remember that conversation with Scott Pruitt, and frankly, his conversation about baseball was far more interesting than when I tried to get him on the issues, because he was so talking point focused that I don't know how much news value really came out of our interview, unfortunately. I tried, and I just don't think we made much news. I do remember back in the 2004 cycle with John Kerry, the Democrats' nominee then, the Massachusetts senator, and when the Red Sox traded Nomar Garciaparra, their star shortstop, to the Chicago Cubs, I thought, all right, that had just happened, was big news, clearly. And John Kerry was not a particularly, how do you describe it, a super outgoing, bubbly, fun kind of interview, right?
He was a policy guy.
He was a policy guy.
He loved the wonk side of the committees.
Yes.
He enjoyed being a senator for getting stuff done.
And he would very much go into that Senate vernacular that, you know, confuses people. People don't follow that stuff. He was definitely a politician when he interviewed him. And I asked him about the Nomar trade, and he showed no personality with that. I thought he had such a cautious response. And I thought, all right, if he's a true Red Sox fan, he's either going to be like, oh, man. Man, that's brutal. Nomar's been our star for years. This just shows the Red Sox are, you know, they're stuck here. They're not good enough. We're going to trade him away, make an opportunity for a young guy, and give Nomar a chance to play on a winning team, you know, whatever it is. Man, there was nothing there. He wouldn't really take a position, wouldn't do anything, and it was such a dud. And if I remember right, that was in Cedar Rapids. So the photographer and I are driving back, and I was thinking, man, did that fall flat on its face with a chance to show some personality, and it didn't happen.
Well, and maybe that's one of those, you bring up one topic here. One last thing I want to discuss is that's the candidate I want to have a beer with. That's the candidate I want to be regular or be like me. But at the same time, isn't the candidate supposed to be the runner of the free world and be able to handle, as you said, 99 things in that dossier that we may never, 99% of it we'll never know or see? Maybe I'm okay that they don't know about the Nomar Garciaparra trade right away.
Right.
You know, and maybe I don't have the great beer question about what do you like better, hops? Do you like those hops from there? Can you taste it? Can you taste the bouquet? I sometimes don't. Maybe I want them to be thinking about a topic. I know that that's always that's one of those political horse race things. Is that when they were real? Is that when they weren't real? That some people get annoyed with.
No, that's I totally agree with you. And people have different expectations for candidates. What they want, what they want us to ask them. And I think there's definitely a fine line. But I also think if you're the candidate and you don't want to talk about beer, I would get rid of the question. Be like, you know what? I don't really drink beer. I don't really care about beer. You know what I care about? It's climate change or it's whatever, you know, and then lead into that. So, you know, I think some of that's on them, that they can kind of steer the topic back to whatever it is. Because you're right. They don't have an obligation to weigh in on, you know, who won American Idol or whatever the issue is.
That shows they're dialed into the real person. As long as you don't ask them, where is that particular field that grows all the ethanol?
Right.
And they can't answer that, then that's probably a bell and whistle.
Yes, exactly.
David Price, I appreciate the time. And let's get back to the game here as we move on to the bottom half of the fourth. And thanks for trying something different.
Of course, and apologies for the hoarse voice. I think it's because I took my son and my brother. One of my brothers went with me. We went to the return of Albert Pujols, the Cardinal great, to Busch Stadium this week, and we went to Saturday's game. I'm talking to you 2 days later, and I'm still a little hoarse, so you can tell we did a little cheering. And when Albert hit his home run late in the game Saturday afternoon, apparently my voice is still not recovered.
It's a good thing you weren't on the news last night is what you're trying to say.
Yes, it was a wise move to take that night off.
Well, and I was questioning myself if I would have cheered had I been in that stadium or not. I wasn't 100% sure which way. I'm sure I would feel it and I would cheer. I don't know if I would cheer for all 12 at-bats.
It was 4-0 Cardinals. It was really the best of both worlds, and I was there with my son, who was born in 2010, and Pujols left after the 11th season. So my son has no memory of Albert as a Cardinal, you know, the greatest Cardinal since I've been alive, and one of the greatest ever, and he only knows him with the Angels, and Pujols has been in decline, especially the last several years. So it was great for him to experience that. I was with the brother who's only 2 years younger than I, so we grew up on baseball together. My brother's at least as big a baseball fan as I am, if not more. And to be able to wrap all of that into one day, a Cardinal win, it was improbable in the sense it rained all morning. We thought it was going to get rained out, so it was improbable. They played. Cards won. Great ovations. Albert got a curtain call after his home run, which I'm not sure has ever happened for a visiting player before. And it was remarkable. He's really close friends with Yadier Molina, the legendary catcher for the Cardinals. They hugged after the Pujols home run. Molina reached into the dirt, and as Albert's crossing home plate, he threw a little pebble or dirt at him just in playful jest. And my brother saw it. I didn't even catch it at the time, so I saw it on video later. But everything about it was just truly a magical day. And what a great – my son and I could talk about that on the drive back from my mom's Sunday afternoon. And just to look back on that, and I told him, I said, I hope this is a weekend that we never forget.
That's right. And that's because every pitch matters.
Indeed.
All right. Dave Price, thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
This has been a production of Iowa Public Television and the Market to Market TV show. If you'd like to get a hold of us, email us at markettomarket@iptv.org. I'm Paul Yeager. Thank you so very much for listening.